Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, and today we're going to talk about why law firms and the legal industry is so far behind when it comes to marketing and business development. Our guest today is Howard Kravitz. Howard is currently the chief marketing officer for a global Am Law 50 firm, Winston & Strawn. At Winston & Strawn, Howard oversees business development, marketing, branding, and the communications efforts for the firm. He reports directly to the chairman, and he also sits on the executive committee of the firm. Welcome to the show, Howard.
Thank you so much, Guy. It's nice to be here, and thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Before we get into the meat of the conversation, obviously, I've known you for a little while now. You were at a different Am Law 50 firm, but before that, you were, if I recall correctly, at one of the big five professional services firms. Tell us a little bit about how you felt the shift from a big five firm into the legal industry, and you know, what do you think are the biggest differences you're seeing so far?
Sure. We actually refer to it as the big four. So I'm
the big
sorry
four,
about that.
Right.
They,
yes,
they used
correct.
To be eight, now they're down to four anyway.
That's right. Big four.
PwC, KPMG, EY, and Deloitte.
Correct.
So, you know, the biggest difference to me was, it was a couple things. Number one, the sheer size of the larger professional services firm gave people like me the opportunity to interact with a whole host of really bright people. So you could reach into the organization and find people to help you get just about anything done. That was number one. Number two, I thought that the larger organization was more technologically advanced than what I see in the legal environment. And probably number three was there was a bit more of a teaming mentality. The way that people were compensated on the front line had more to do about the success that the team achieved rather than the individual contributor, like a lawyer or a partner in the legal industry.
Absolutely. Well, those are great observations. So talking about the topic today, you know, legal industry is so far behind. What do you mean by that? Where do you think really, you know, they're really behind as compared to other industries and other companies?
Yeah, I think we're behind in three major areas. So in no particular order, but I can't help but count myself anyway. So number one, I would say that, and as you know very well, that the legal industry is technologically or digitally behind. I mean, the way that work gets done, the way that ideas are communicated into the stratosphere, and you know, it's just far behind the way that people consume information and get their work done today. And actually, over the past year and a half, the pandemic has forced the industry to take a really hard look at how we get work done and how we communicate with clients and prospective clients. Secondly, I would say that the idea of client teaming, client interactions, in the other types of industries, individuals come together inside of a company or a firm, and they really think together about how to pursue and grow a client relationship. And I think the legal industry still operates with, you know, I'm an individual contributor. I'm a lawyer that specializes in X, and this is my client. And I think that, you know, that's very different in other industries. And I think the, you know, the third area is, it's a little bit related to the first, but boy, our websites, our content, our interactions, you know, our social media profiles and efforts are really behind the way modern marketing is done.
Absolutely. I totally agree with everything you said. So let's talk a little bit first about client teaming, because that's an interesting concept. And, you know, having worked at KPMG myself, I do know what you're talking about with regards to that. Why do you think lawyers and law firms have such a problem approaching the client as a team? Do you think it has to do with the culture? Is it the way that lawyers are compensated? Or is there other factors that affect the ability for lawyers to really function as a team?
I think it's a couple of things. So there's no question that compensation plays into it. And different firms have different ways of compensating people. And yet still there is this feeling in the industry, or maybe it's, you know, more real than a feeling, that a singular contributor, whether it's a litigator, an M&A lawyer, whatever your, an employment, labor and employment lawyer, whatever your specialty is, that you've created a relationship with the buyer of those legal services, and you don't want anything to get in the way of that. So one is, the compensation and the ownership idea. And the second is, I hate to say this, but there's a trust factor. I think that particularly in big law, most lawyers feel really secure in their ability to deliver a certain level of quality and value to their clients. And they're not sure if their colleagues will live up to the standards that they have for themselves. There's a risk. I may not want to introduce my colleague because I fear that they may not be as smart as me in my area of expertise or be able to live up to the standards that I know this client needs.
So, that really affects, at least from my perspective, two things, right? Number one is being able to provide the best level of all around service to a client and thinking of a client holistically, not just with, what do I need to do, but what does the client as a whole need and how can we provide the best type of service? And then I also, tangentially, I think the ability to cross-sell, right? The ability to sell additional services or do other things that you're currently doing. Do you agree with that? Is there, is there other things that it affects?
No, I think those are spot on. And I think the cross-sell, adding additional value to a client relationship is a really important piece because I think that many lawyers, and to their everlasting credit, they become so knowledgeable and specialized in their area of expertise that it becomes difficult to understand precisely how another part of the firm will add value to that relationship. I know from one place that I worked with, and we hired an outside consultant firm, and they did a fair amount of interviews with clients, and it was amazing how frequently the client said, "I didn't know that you even did that."
Yeah.
So, that's fear, right? Fear, trust, whatever the right word might be, but it's one lawyer saying, "I'm not really sure how to talk about this, so I just won't."
So how are you dealing with that at your firm? Like, how do you get lawyers, how do you convince them, or how do you help them to gain that level of trust with their colleagues? What are some of the things that have worked for you?
Well, first of all, I wish we were better at it. I just start off right off the bat saying, I haven't cracked the code on this one. And it's a never-ending, process and challenge. So some of the things. Number one, great credit to big law leaders that bring on laterals that are experts in their field. So before sitting on the executive committee, I do see how laterals are put in front of the executive committee and the leadership of the firm. And before they can join the firm or asked to join the firm or offered, they have a vetting process which suggests that they are, in fact, experts in what they do, which means it's a little easier for their colleagues to introduce them into a relationship because there's the trust factor is there. Number two, pre-pandemic, we would take a lateral and they would go on a tour and go visit with various different partners and offices. Post-pandemic, I've started personally, I've done a podcast. We talk with new partners about their secrets and what they offer and the value they deliver to the firm. There's a fair amount of blocking and tackling, and it is a bit of a contact sport, but we have to call partners and say, you do X, and there's somebody here in this firm who does X plus. You should talk to them, and here's why. And we try to facilitate those meetings and create that engagement.
So you do an internal podcast at the firm?
I do, yes.
It's a great idea. I love that idea. All right, let's talk a little bit about, where lawyers fall short, both with regards to business development and maybe things that they can do differently when it comes to pitches and presentations. What have you seen? What have you observed? And where do you think they're falling short?
I'm going to talk about the second one before I talk about the first one. So a couple things. Number one, lawyers by definition are professional skeptics, and they've been trained to argue really well. And they are, right? I mean, they're fantastic at this. And that's not necessarily what clients want. So the ability to put ourselves in the shoes of another person is something that, in general, the profession falls down a little bit at, right? And I say that in general because obviously there are some people that are very good at it. And I conduct client win-loss debriefs. And invariably, when we lose, there is some connection point. Sure, sometimes we lose because of price. Sure, sometimes we lose because, you know, somebody views another firm's expertise as being better than ours. But invariably, there's a connection that has failed to be made. Oftentimes, and I'm speaking in general terms, but oftentimes, you know, a lawyer will walk in and feel that their expertise and their credentials will win the day. Mm-hmm. And they fail to recognize that we're in a relationship business and we're talking one human being to another human being. And we need to spend a little more time asking questions, understanding what that human being, what their goals and objectives are, what their problems are, what their challenges are.
Yeah. You know,
it's likely that almost anyone we speak to has a boss. What are their objectives? What kinds of pressure are they under? And I hear that, you know, the more we understand that, the better our chances are. In terms of business development, I think in general, and I'll be brief here, in general, lawyers often feel that, again, their expertise and their credentials speaks for themselves, so they lack some authenticity. And I do see that those that are the top rainmakers in our firm in particular, of course, they're experts or specialists in their field, but they also have a level of authenticity, humility, humanism, if you will. They have an ability to relate to another individual and to speak with them, and that wins the day. So just putting out on social media, to go into your world for a second, oh, I just got this award, doesn't really mean much to the receiver of that information.
I completely agree. That's really interesting. We've been doing a lot of work, and we're going to be launching a big initiative this year around the concept of account-based marketing, ABM, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And one of the things that I have found, you know, the concept itself, the words may be new, but, you know, law firms have been dealing with target accounts for a long time. They just don't call it ABM. But one of the things that I think is lacking is exactly what you're talking about, is, you know, really doing research into both the client and the individuals to find out what are things that concern them? What are the problems that they're facing? What are the opportunities that they have within their business? And I know that's something that, you know, the Big Four do really, really well and spend a lot of time and effort researching and then developing value propositions around those issues, right?
Yeah, they also come at it through an industry lens. So rather than saying, you know, I'm a trial lawyer or I'm an M&A specialist and, oh, well, I can do a deal across, you know, for any kind of company, I'm not sure that clients really want to hear that. You know, they want to hear that you've done deals in their industry over and over and over again. And one of the things that the Big Four does really well is that they go at the client with an industry perspective. So when they're in front of them, right, they can talk the language, they can use the acronyms and vernaculars, and they can highlight the issues that client is likely experiencing. And then they can, to use your words, they can present a value proposition on how they can help.
Absolutely. So you mentioned industries and an industry focus. And one of the things I notice a lot is a lot of firms on their websites, they'll have industry pages, right? Well, they'll talk about their knowledge and experience within a particular industry. But I find really the breadth and depth of that content to really be lacking. And it's really not a go-to-market by industry. It's more positioning, but it's not really, you know, substantive. You know, what's your opinion about an industry focus and how can it make a difference for a firm?
First of all, completely agree with your assessment. And my experience in professional services, prior firms in the Big Four, was that an industry focus was a key differentiator. We did it in analysis and looked at when we could charge the highest price. And speaking from the client's lens, or the client voice, if you will, it was essentially the client would say, understand my industry, understand my company, understand my problem, and understand me. And when those four things were in place, the firm I was with could get a premium price. You know, there's a lot of analysis that went into that, but thousands of clients were interviewed. And it was really clear that it might be intuitive to people like you or me, or our listeners, but it was nice to have data that supported that at the time. And I don't think it's changed much. So I think an industry lens is really, really important. And I agree with you that in the legal industry, we sort of say it, but we don't. Because as soon as an opportunity pops up, maybe in a different industry, you know, let's say you're a trial lawyer, you say, oh, well, I can try a case. You know, I've been in that courthouse, in that district, in front of that judge 10 times. And so, yeah, sure, I can do this. But you might not know anything about that industry, right?
I agree 100%. You know, going back to one of your first points in terms of legal being far behind when it comes to technology, you know, what specifically do you, I mean, yes, websites and, you know, websites need to be updated, content needs to be expanded. I think the targeting of content is something that a lot of firms need to work on. You know, what other technologies do you feel that are maybe underutilized or not well understood within the legal industry that in your experience could make a significant difference?
It's a great question. And I think there's two areas. There's workflow. And I think a lot of us have learned how to do a better job of using collaboration tools. And, you know, just because we've been virtual or remote, we've had to figure out a way to use technologies. And I think the profession, the industry has done a pretty good job of that. I think more towards the client side, one of the things that we established in our firm was a data analytics and technology group. And I think you realize when you set that up, wow, we're probably a little behind in our use of client relationship management. I personally believe that there are three systems that have to be able to speak to each other: the human resources tool, the financial management system, and of course our client relationship management tool. Those three things go together. They form a very strong base. And I think too often in the legal industry, we don't take a holistic view of the client. So we're not really utilizing today's client relationship management suite of tools to have a better understanding of clients and potential gaps and looking, and then using that, I'll just finish in a second here, using that to potentially predict opportunities for growth and or flag relationships that are at risk.
I love it. I totally agree. So, you know, I remember one of the first times I met you, I believe you were part of a panel. You were doing a presentation for LMA, talking about a particular campaign you had worked at. And, you know, one of the things that really occurred to me at that point was, you know, law firms really don't have, for the most part, a campaign-driven approach to marketing, right? And a lot of times when I'm talking to law firms, they want to do, well, you know, what's our firm strategy and what are the things we should be doing at a firm level? But if you think about it, and I know, for example, Deloitte, you know, they do 150, 180 different digital campaigns a year, and they measure the hell out of each of them to really see what's working, what's not working. You know, what is your sense about campaign-driven marketing? Is that something you guys are doing at your firm? And why do you think firms are not really understanding the importance of marketing by campaigns?
First of all, yes, we're trying to do more of it. Secondly, the lack of technology tools and measurement tools in particular make it very difficult to draw a straight line from marketing activity to essentially ROI, right? It's really hard. So it becomes anecdotal. And as soon as you have something that's anecdotal, you allow for lots of opinions. And we work in firms that have, you know, hundreds of owners. And so you have a lot of opinions that come into place as to what's effective or what's not effective. And I think that the lack of data to prove a campaign's effectiveness creates the opportunity for discussion that, you know, I'd really love to be able to just walk in and, whether digitally or with a piece of paper, you know, be able to say to somebody, you know, look, we posted X, we did Y, it led to this many leads, it led to this type of revenue, it led to this type of opportunity, you know, et cetera. So we're behind. And that's one of the reasons why I said at the outset that this profession is really far behind in terms of modern marketing, because you don't get that kind of anecdotal thinking if you work at a modern marketing company. You use data.
I agree. All right, last question for you. One is, you know, you sit on the executive committee in the firm. I think that's fantastic. I know a lot of CMOs don't actually have that opportunity to actually sit at the table, if you will, and have direct input, you know, and you're not a lawyer. So from your perspective, how important is it for a marketing professional or CMO to have a seat at that table? And, you know, not being a lawyer, how can you help lawyers if they say to you, well, you're not a lawyer? How have you navigated that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's something, of course, a lot of us in the profession struggle with. I think you need to be substantive in what you do and what you offer. Let's face it, we have to know a little bit about what the lawyers are doing every day. And, you know, we have to be able to speak to them or speak with them in the language that they understand. So yeah, you got to put in some effort to understand a little bit without having a JD. And at the same time, you know, to ask really good questions. What are we trying to achieve? What's the goal? And then offer marketing or business development solutions. I'll give you an example. Without giving too much away, you know, recently somebody wrote to me and said, can I vent for a moment? And they had a problem with another partner. One partner writing to me going, can I vent to you? And they had a problem. They didn't think this partner was being fast enough on the draw, so to speak, to take advantage of an opportunity. And I was able to talk to the partner who was venting and say, have we thought about, you know, doing A, B, or C? And, you know, that partner said, boy, those are great ideas. I should have thought of them. Thank you for listening. Thank you for helping. And he went back to his partner, offered up a couple of options. That second partner said, oh, I can easily do this. And the day is done. And, you know, that partner who was venting to me was really appreciative of the expertise that I lent to his problem. And I think that's the way, you know, you got to bring a little gravitas, if you will. Sure. But the way you do that is by asking some questions and finding solutions. Let's face it, I'm not going to help a lawyer win a case in court. You know, I'm not going to be able to go through deal papers and figure out what's missing. But if you want to figure out how to introduce a partner into a relationship, I can help you with that. You want to figure out how to tell the world that we have a capability that other people didn't know we had, I can help you with that. And last point, we have to protect the firm. So people who sit in, you know, shoes like mine, we get up every day. Not only do we promote the firm, but we have to think about how to protect it. What articles are being written about us? What's being said in the press? How will our partners and owners feel about that brand?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. So unfortunately, we're out of time. You know, I'd love to have you back at some time in the future. But before I let you go, what would be one word of advice or one actionable item that you give to our audience? What would you say to them, you know, that you think is important?
Simple word, prep, preparation. Prep for client meetings. I can tell you, and Guy, you said you were at KPMG, so maybe you recall, when I worked for one of the big four, you know, a 1 hour client interaction, we might prep for 4, 6, 8 hours, days for that meeting. And I think too often our colleagues in the legal profession walk in and feel like their expertise and credentials will sell themselves. And they don't really think about the objections, the issues, the challenges, the number of people in the room. You know, they don't spend enough time. And I know time is money. We got to win too, right? So prep.
Love it. All right, Howard. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you being on the show. For our audience, if you enjoy today's episodes and you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, you can go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there and also check out some of our past episodes. Howard, thank you again for being here. Good luck to you and hope to have you back on the show sometime in the future.
Thanks for having me, Guy. It's a pleasure to get a chance to spend a few minutes with you, and best of luck to you and to all of the listeners as well.
Thank you.